From Capital Broadcasting Company, this is WRAL Out and About. I am your host, Kathy Hanrahan, and this is a podcast about bringing people together. And local businesses, they've been struggling as the coronavirus is continuing to wreak havoc. WRAL and Capital Broadcasting Company has launched a weekly roundtable series to try and share ideas and resources with the community on how to adapt and weather this storm. The conversation was hosted by Chris Overby, Director of Business Development at Capital Broadcasting Company. Why don't we take a listen to this week's webinar?
Cherith Robertson, she's the Director of the Small Business Center at Wake Technical Community College, and she's going to be talking about resources available for small businesses, kind of a broad bird's eye view and what you need to be thinking about as a business owner. Cherith, thanks for joining us, and where should we start? What's the best place for a business owner to be thinking about, you know, their checklist right now?
Hey, Chris, thanks so much for having me. And for all of our small business owners out there, you all are so important to the local economy and our backbone. And so we are all here as a community rooting for you. And as Chris was saying, I work with a lot of small business owners at the Small Business Center, and I've collated a list of resources that you all should be aware of for helping you navigate COVID-19 and post-COVID-19. So the first resource I want to make sure you're familiar with is the Small Business Center Network of North Carolina. So I run the Wake Tech Small Business Center, but every community college in North Carolina has a small business center. And we are paid for by your tax dollars. So we're your tax dollars at work. We have free services that include webinars, one-on-one confidential business counseling. We can assist you with loan preparation, business plans, and more to help you not only navigate COVID-19, but post-COVID-19. And you can find your local small business center. If you're not in the Raleigh area, you can find your local small business center by Googling Small Business Center Network of North Carolina. Another resource, a free resource I want to point out is the SBTDC. The SBTDC is the Small Business Technology Development Center, and they are funded by the SBA. And similar to the Small Business Centers of North Carolina, they also offer free one-on-one business counseling, and they can also help you navigate small business loans and other questions that are right now surrounding your business. Another key resource that I'd encourage you to reach out to is your local bank or community-based lender. What I caution small businesses to do right now is not to make decisions by themselves. Asking for help and asking a second person for their advice and just getting that second opinion can help you bridge the gap and make sure that you're making the best decisions for your business at a time when it can be a little bit harder to make those good decisions because we don't know exactly what's going to happen next in our community. Other resources would be your local chamber of commerce. Our local chambers are working incredibly hard to provide lists of businesses who are still open and also to help their members navigate this. So follow your local chamber on social media. Make sure you're signed up for their email list. Stay in the loop with what they're doing. And then, of course, your local officials, the economic development for your town and your town council, reach out to them. Let them know how your business is being affected and also just stay in the loop with what they're telling you in your community. And as a part of the Small Business Center Network, we've created a COVID-19 page that has a comprehensive list of resources to help you navigate COVID-19. So you can visit that at the Small Business Center Network website as well. So I created a step-by-step list that I'm sharing with clients that are coming to us and saying, okay, I kind of have to figure out what am I doing right now? I've had to close my doors. What's next for me? So the first thing that we're really encouraging folks to do is make sure you know what all of your business expenses are. What's that bottom line number that you need to quote unquote keep the doors open? So how do you stay in business for the next 30, 60, or 90 days? And is there a way that you can be creative while practicing social distancing with what you're offering your clients? So if you've had to close the doors and you can't have physical customers right now, which most small businesses can't, what are some other options for revenue streams and thinking about that and how it plays into what your business expenses are? And then the next thing that we're encouraging folks to do is having a plan for the next 4 to 6 weeks that allows for worst case scenarios. And we say that because nobody would have thought, 30, 60 or 90 days ago that we would all be working remotely and kids would be getting their education online. So thinking through what happens if I'm taking care of someone who's sick, what happens if I get sick, what happens if a key employee gets sick, so that my business has somewhat of a backup plan to allow us to continue to operate. And the next thing that you're going to want to do is you're going to want to negotiate and ask for help. We're all in this together. So reach out to, if you have a brick and mortar, if you have space that you're leasing, ask your landlord for 90 days of rent abatement. You may have some conversations with your landlord around what that looks like. But there are landlords who are willing to help tenants with that. And then also asking your lenders for 90-day deferral programs. A lot of lenders and banks have some flexibility to work with their clients right now. So reach out, let them know how your revenue has been affected and ask them what options you have. And then make sure you're communicating with your customers. So tell them what you're doing and tell them over and over and over again. And the reason I say that is there is a lot of noise right now online. I heard one number that internet usage is up by 78% across the United States. So now more than ever, you have a lot of other people who are also communicating. So having a communication plan where you can effectively tell your customers what you're doing and how they can still support your business is really important. And then applying for both and either or the Paycheck Protection Program loan that will be applications, I believe, will be opening tomorrow on Friday, April 3rd, and the SBA Disaster Assistance Loan that applications can be found directly on the SBA website at sba.gov. Those two loans are going to be really beneficial. I know we're going to talk a little bit more about the CARES Act and the Paycheck Protection Program later in this session. So a lot of my business owners are talking about, well, how do we get creative? Or what can I do to use this as an opportunity for my business? So what do you do that might be helpful skill for people right now? An example would be if you are a local maker, a seamstress, and you can pivot to making fabric masks and selling those in your community, donating those in your community. Not only does that build goodwill in your community, but it also shows that you have you're able to understand and see what is needed right now. If you can't sell in a traditional way and there's not a way for you to have another revenue stream right now, can you use this as an opportunity to build goodwill? An example of this would be if you're a DJ company, can you contact local nursing homes and on a day when the weather's going to be nice, go play in the nursing home parking lot, play some music that the residents will enjoy. So thinking about what my community might really benefit from right now and how I can serve them in a unique way. And while I'm doing that, being really intentional. So we can all come up with 15 or 20 different ways that we can serve our community. Being intentional and asking yourself, what is this going to do to support my business in the short and long term? And specifically, if you're doing it as a business opportunity, obviously you absolutely give back to your community in other ways separate from your business. We definitely encourage that. But as you're building goodwill for your business, can you use that as an opportunity to increase your social media followers? Can you build your email list? How do you think about how this is going to help your business move forward post COVID-19? And The last two things I want to leave you all with is exercising caution. There's a lot of really well-intentioned, misguided information that's going on around online, on social media. So if something doesn't sound right, or if you're having trouble navigating a process or a loan document, or somebody's offering you help with something, but they're charging for it, ask for a second opinion. There are a lot of scams that are happening. And again, a lot of friends who mean well, but may not have the most up-to-date or accurate information. So don't hesitate to reach out. And with that, I want to leave my contact information. I'm happy to be one of those resources to help you figure out if that resource is the right resource for you. So I can be found on our website at sbc.waketech.edu, or my phone number is 919-272-3278. And my email address is croberson@waketech.edu. And we can connect you, and I can help you answer those questions and navigate those challenges that your business is encountering.
That's awesome. We really appreciate all that information, Cherith. And actually, a lot of the topics that you brought up and ideas that you kind of started on are things I think we're going to dig into a little bit deeper, especially when you talked about building goodwill with your customers. I think that's actually the expertise that our next guest is going to bring to the table, Farnoosh Brock. So I did want to definitely say thank you, Cherith, for joining us, and stick around, and we're going to field questions as we get a little bit closer. I think, you know, another topic you brought up are the Paycheck Protection Program, et cetera. And like you said, we will definitely be digging into that into much more detail as we move along. So thank you, Cherith, and I will welcome Farnoosh Brock. Farnoosh.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Chris, and for this opportunity to share a little bit of my insights during the pandemic for all of us. So if you would go.
Good. Yeah, go ahead.
Whenever you're ready. Great. So I'd like to talk to you a little bit about how we can raise the bar on service, on serving our teams, clients, customers, and our community at large. And I want to start with talking about the right mindset, the right perspective that we can adopt, and then follow that up with actionable, hopefully useful steps that you can take starting today in your business. The next slide. So I talk about what I call the serving mindset, which means we have the best interest of our prospect, our customer, our team, our staff at heart, and we start there. And I really believe more than ever right now, if you could get into that place of how can I serve, it would be truly invaluable now and help us thrive as business owners later. So the first stage of that is accepting our new reality, even if we dislike it, and coming to this place of, okay, this has happened, we are here, this is the way that we are going to do business for the near future, and how do we accept this? And you come to that place internally. And one indicator for that is when you do come to a place of acceptance, your internal energy shifts and you feel a little more energized and hopeful as you go about your day. And that's the first step. So if we've had some trouble the first few weeks accepting this situation, we need to come to that place of acceptance because we have work to do and we have people to take care of. And that brings us to that next step, which is temporarily shifting focus from the tactical and the strategy in the business to investing in the relationships and in the people even more than before, because those are the real assets, and whatever we need to navigate together, that's what we want to focus on first with that shift. And we do that by the next part is by rising to lead. And this is where I would like us to think of ourselves as self-appointed leaders, because right now everyone is looking for leadership, somebody to lean on to, somebody to listen to, somebody who can influence us positively through this time. And this is regardless of your title in your business, whether you are the head owner, the president, or the employee, the individual contributor, it's regardless of that. We can all rise to a level of leadership and bring that leadership to the people who are around us. So that's the mindset, that's the perspective that I would like to invite you to explore during this time if you haven't in the past. So let's talk about what that looks like when we start to implement that. Next, wonderful. So first, what does it mean to show up as a leader? And I say at every chance, and by that I mean every chance you get to interact with your staff, your team, your customers, the people that rely on you, that want to depend on you, whether that is a phone call, a video call, an email communication, a text, you want to exude the characteristic traits of a leader. And I have some ideas on what that might look like, some ideas that might resonate with you. And I hope you take away whatever resonates here. So Chris, if you would. So these are just a few. And in fact, WIRAL does this very well for us, separating facts from fear. And even more important than that, separating facts from panic, which tends to grip us from time to time as we are, again, going through this uncertainty. And if you can be the leader for those around you, even just verbally, then it can go a long way to bring calm and reassurance and making people feel even more appreciated than before. So if you were doing that before, to do that even more, and that tends to make them want to appreciate you and the business and the relationship more. So it's reciprocated. And be the one that can share realistic optimism about our future. So this doesn't mean being all positive and giddy. It means that we recognize what's happening and the pain that it's bringing temporarily, but we have a realistic optimism about the future. And I think that's a great reminder to many people that are, you know, we come into contact with. So that's the first step. The second one is taking excellent care of your own people. Needless to say, it starts at home with family, but in the context of business, I would say that is the people that you work with, your partners, your colleagues, your direct reports, your staff. So showing deeper empathy in conversations and meetings. I was actually just talking to one of my clients who runs an IT consulting firm, and he does this already really well. But I was reminding him to spend a little more time at the beginning of those conversations with his staff to ask them questions such as, and I have those here for you, how are you adapting to the new working environment at home? Or how are you taking care of yourself and your family? And this can take maybe 2 to 3 minutes, or anything I can do to ease any concerns or fears for you. How can I help? And nobody's going to look to you for the ultimate solution because we don't have that, but investing two or three minutes before you get to the business agenda, not only does it help them feel more appreciated and valued, but it increases the focus that then everyone brings to the business agenda. So this, I think, goes a long way right now with all the disruption that's happening to everyone, and to do this at the beginning of your conversations. And the other one is taking care of your current customers and clients. So what does that look like? So you would naturally want to give them an update how and if your services are disrupted and changed for them where they are concerned, and inspire them with your leadership through your actions, through the way that you show up, through the way that you communicate and interact with them. And an example of that might be an outreach example. Hey, John, I hope you're well and in good spirits during the pandemic. It's a difficult time for all of us. If you'd like to hop on a call and share what's most on your mind, I'd be happy to listen. This is not a conversation that's around necessarily business so much as you are checking in with your customers, your clients, the people who are your asset in your business. And I recommend no mass emails if it can be helped. Those need to go out on certain occasions, sure. But if you can reach out on an individual basis, whether it's a phone call, a text, or anything that's personal, it goes a long way to making them feel appreciated and to deepen the trust in that relationship. And that's within our control right now. We can do that. So my closing thoughts for you as we look ahead is, really a question that's more to reflect on. I'd like you to ask yourself, how can you serve your ecosystem so powerfully that they will feel compelled to do business with you in the future and hopefully continue to do business with you? And to answer that question, the question you want to ask yourself is, what needs to happen for you to feel that way about a business? Maybe they need to send you a card, a thank you card, or give you a phone call. But whatever that looks like for you, perhaps you can bring that to your own ecosystem and serve them so powerfully that they will remember you after the pandemic. So I went through that a little bit fast, but I didn't want to go beyond my time limit here.
No. Yeah, I think you did great. We really appreciate it. I think, you know, so just a note here that Farnoosh is an author. She's written a book called The Serving Mindset. And I think that's kind of what you're hearing today are her thoughts around how focusing on how you can serve other people, you know, your vendors, your employees, your teammates, colleagues, et cetera, is just a good place to start when it comes to, you know, how do you build goodwill out of this that can turn into something that you might get a return on later in the future. And I've seen some good examples of that. I got a call from a car dealership a week or two ago, just the, you know, hey, we're checking on you, not trying to sell you anything kind of call. And I think that what I've seen is those are appreciated, and that goes a long way. So we definitely appreciate the advice today, Farnoosh. We're going to go to our friends over here at the Forest Farm. We've got three attorneys on right now, and we're glad to have them. We've got Nicole Murphy, Brian Bernhardt, and John Burns, and these guys have been doing a lot of work. They actually did two webinars yesterday on these topics, and I was able to listen in on some of that, and there's lots of good information. But we're going to go ahead and turn it over to you guys and have you tell us about what's going on with especially the latest legislation, you know, with all the stimulus package and everything that's been passed, that business owners have very little time now to figure out exactly what they ought to be doing. So maybe you guys can get us started. I think we'll start with John, if you want to talk to us a little bit about the Payroll Protection Program.
I certainly appreciate the opportunity to speak to all of you and appreciate the prior panelists. I'm John Burns. I'm a litigator at Forest Firm, and my colleagues, Nicole Murphy and Brian Bernhardt, are on here with us. I'm going to speak very briefly about one of the most important changes to the law that was in response to COVID-19. There was a very large bill that you probably heard of called the CARES Act, which is over 900 pages, passed last Friday and signed by the president on the same day. Title I of that act is called the Keeping American Workers Paid and Employed Act. But what you're going to hear it referred to as is the Paycheck Protection Program. What the Paycheck Protection Program does is provides $349 billion for loan assistance to small businesses and nonprofits in 2020, basically in the couple of months that are ahead of us. It is designed to help small employers cover their payroll and basic operating expenses. And instead of just being aimed at the typical small business that the SBA deals with, it has expanded the definition of what a small business is for the purposes of this act to include nonprofit organizations, as well as independent contractors and solo operators and sole proprietorships, as well as tribal business concerns, if any of you are involved in those, or with 501c19 veterans organizations. Basically, if you employ fewer than 500 employees, you are most likely eligible for a PPP, is what we're calling these. And the way you qualify is to have 500 employees or fewer, and then you can get a loan up to 2.5 times your average monthly payroll costs in the year prior to the declaration of emergency, which was, I believe, February 15th of 2020. And payroll costs is a very broad definition, includes salaries, wages, and commissions, as you would expect, but also paid leave, paid vacation, dismissal allowances, group health benefits, retirement benefits, anything you pay in compensation to your employees. It does not, though, include compensation over $100,000 for any employee, and it doesn't include federal income and withholding taxes paid on that compensation. So it covers your expenses and operational costs during what's called the covered period, which is defined in the statute as 8 weeks after your loan origination. And the loan application opens tomorrow for small businesses and next week for independent contractors and solo operators. So 8 weeks after the origination of your loan, you can use this loan to pay your payroll costs, to pay interest on a pre-existing mortgage, to pay your rent on a pre-existing lease, and to pay your utilities on a pre-existing utilities contract. So this is designed to keep you operating, to keep your employees employed and insured during this pandemic. And it is a loan, but the really interesting part of this is that it converts to a grant and is forgiven after June 30th if you maintain your payroll and if you maintain your headcount as of June 30th of 2020. So if you have terminated people, laid people off in March or up to 30 days after the passing of the act on for April 26th of 2020, you can hire those people back by June 30th and you get the full credit for your payroll and headcount. And you don't get your forgiveness reduced at the end of the loan. Otherwise, if you have reduced your pay count or payroll or reduced your headcount, you can find that that forgiveness percentage of the loan will be reduced and you'll still owe it. So it's incentivizing you to keep people on your payroll. I realize that's a more complicated question, and the numbers and formula mm-hmm. they follow to get to that point are more complicated than we can cover. This is one of those things that Farnoosh was talking about. It's an optimistic approach. We're going to get through this, and these loans are designed to help small businesses do that while keeping their employees on the payroll. Now I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Brian, because he's got a few additional topics to cover under this payroll protection, also some tax incentives that are offered by the CARES Act.
Thanks, John. Can everybody hear me? I want to make sure I'm not on mute.
We can hear you. Yeah, great. You're good to go.
Thank you, everybody, for coming today and taking the time out of your day. I appreciate it. John really covered the high points of the Paycheck Protection Program. I don't want to spend a lot more time on it. I know we're all limited for time, and that was a very good macro review. I do want to touch on a few other provisions of the CARES Act. These are later on in Title II, the third part of that title. There are a whole number of about eight or nine provisions that are business tax provisions. Small businesses can take advantage of these provisions to help save some money. I'm just going to touch on a handful of them. There's obviously a lot more detail than what I'm going to tell you, but I want to hit the highlights. One of the provisions is called the 50% employee retention tax credit. And what it does is it gives employers, eligible employers, a payroll tax credit of 50% of wages they're paying from March 13th through December 31st. The catch is, because there's always a catch, is that your business has to be fully or partially suspended due to a government order relating to the virus, and your gross receipts have to decline more than 50% from the same quarter of last year. So if your business is shut down, for instance, in North Carolina, hair salons under a state order right now are shut down. So you'd qualify under that first prong. And then obviously, if you're closed for 2, 3, 4 months, your gross receipts are going to decline. So you're going to be able to get this payroll tax credit. For those that aren't eligible for that, there is a delay in payment of employer payment taxes, at least the 6.2% Social Security tax. You can get that deferred through the rest of this year. And whatever that amount is, you have to repay half of it by the end of next year, 2021. And half by the end of the following year, December 31st, 2022. It's not an exclusion of those taxes, but it will allow you to spread them out over a couple years. Again, another provision to help keep some liquidity with businesses so you can continue to operate, make payroll, and stick around. Another provision that will probably not help for a little while, but is going into effect now, is a reversal of something that the Tax Cut Act did a couple years ago. Net operating losses under that act were essentially banned to be carried back. You couldn't take them, could not carry your losses back. This act essentially says that if you have a net operating loss in 2018, 19, or 20, you can carry that back 5 years. It's not going to help a whole lot necessarily for a lot of businesses right now, because 18 and 19 were probably pretty good years. But if 2020 is turning out to be a bad year, and for a lot of small businesses, it looks like it might be, you're going to be able to carry back your losses from 20 to 19 and 18 and 17, 16 and 15, offset some income when you file your 2020 return next year, and you'll get a cash infusion at that point in time through a refund. There's a business interest deduction that businesses can take. Typically, it's capped at 30% of your income, of your adjusted taxable income. It's been increased to 50% for this year, unless you're a partnership, in which case it only applies next year. So that's another tax provision that it might allow you to deduct more interest. For those of you that are in the hand sanitizer business, they obviously have a very good lobby, because if you're in that business, there happens to be an excise tax on the distilled spirits that you use, and that excise tax is being waived. So if you are not in that business, are thinking about getting into it, or are in it, that's going to save you some money as well. Those are the highlights of the business tax provisions. There are a whole host of individual tax ones, as well as unemployment insurance provisions as well. But I think these are the ones that'll probably benefit the folks listening the most.
That's great. That's great.
Thanks, guys. Now, this is Nicole Murphy. I'm one of the attorneys in the Charlotte office for Forest Firm, but I've been focusing a lot on the new Families First Coronavirus Response Act. So we're calling it the FFCRA. And the big implication, so now hopefully if businesses are able to go get these payroll protection loans and some new money and financing coming down, one of the new costs for small businesses will be these new paid leave laws. The FFCRA went into effect yesterday, so it is now live, and it does affect all employers who have between 1 and 499 employees. So that's most of your small businesses, of course. It's in effect yesterday, April 1st, and it will remain in effect until December 31st of this year. And what it does is creates a new paid leave requirement. So now the small businesses, we are, of course, expecting a lot of people to get sick because of COVID-19. We're expecting that people will need to take care of others who get sick. And we are expecting a lot of folks to have trouble taking care of minor children, and they can't juggle both work and full-time childcare because daycares and schools are closed as a result of the virus. So what this means now is that, because small businesses never had to provide paid leave. Usually we're used to companies that have 50 employees or more have to follow FMLA, which we know if anyone's taken maternity leave or they've had a sickness or a surgery, you know, you take leave away from work and it's unpaid, up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave. Now this changes everything. Now the businesses are required to provide paid leave, and there's two types. And we've got a white paper on this that we are making available to the participants. So I think the organizers will follow up with the participants today. But the obligation now is that small businesses, again, between 1 and 499 employees, you need to now provide paid leave to your employees if they have, if there's two types. One type is the sick leave. So that is if someone gets sick with COVID-19, or they're caring for someone who is sick, or they're exhibiting symptoms and they're trying to go get tested. These folks will be entitled to 10 days of paid sick leave, and it's up to their regular rate of pay for about, it's maxed out at about, it's $5,110 per employee. If the employee themselves, if they are sick, if your employee has to take leave away from work because they have to care for someone else, it's capped at two-thirds their regular rate of pay, up to $2,000 per employee. And I have all of this in the chart, so not to overwhelm people with numbers. So that's one type, is sick leave. The other type is, I'm calling it the child care leave. It's emergency FMLA, but it's really easier to think about it as child care leave. In this situation, this is up to 12 weeks total where the employee needs to step away. They cannot work on site and they cannot work, they can't telework. And so not even remote working, because they have to take care of minor children. And that's because the daycares are closed and the schools are closed. So in that sense, if you have an employee who cannot work from home, cannot work at all, and needs to take care of minor children, the employer must provide up to 12 weeks of paid leave. And the payment for those employees will depend on whether it's a full-time employee or a part-time employee. So one of the things that we're advising for people, you know, how do you budget for this? Because now the small companies are having to pay this cost. And in exchange, the small companies are going to get a tax credit for the money that they spend on the paid leave. So one of the kind of a rule of thumb that I'm advising clients is take a look at your workforce. Assume if every person who's actively working for you right now, if they got sick and needed to stay home to deal with the sickness, average about $5,000 per employee if that happens for the sick leave. As to the child care leave, look at your employees, figure out how many of these employees have children. And then out of that group, figure out how many of these employees with children would need to take the leave because they can't work remotely, they can't work at all, and they have no caretakers available to provide child care. Then that's your likely pool of people who would need to dip into this child care leave under the new FFCRA. One other little quick tidbit I'll throw out. This is a lot of money for some small businesses to have to pay up front, and it's a new rule and they've never had to do it before. For that reason, there is a sort of an exemption for small businesses with fewer than 50 employees. There is an opportunity for them to get an exemption from these paid leave requirements, but they need to be able to demonstrate that if they were to comply with these new rules, it would jeopardize the financial viability of the business. So in other words, I can't comply with these new paid leave laws. If I do, I will be out of business completely. So, and we can post some links to where the Department of Labor has just yesterday issued a little bit more guidance as to what do small businesses with fewer than 50 employees need to show in order to make that argument to try to get exempt from the rule.
It's a lot that business owners have to consider right now, that things that are going to change about the way benefits are handled, et cetera. And I guess, you know, in a way, a lot of that is good news for employees, but it could definitely change things for employers. So it sounds like a lot of the financial assistance options that are available right now could help play into that as well. And so we did get a lot of questions from our attendees. Points of clarification on some of the things that our group just went over. And I do want to get all those questions answered. We will also send out a follow-up email to this with links and resources. Anything that's referenced here that we're going to be able to get our hands on, we'll make sure that we send to you. Before we dig into those questions, though, I did want to return back to Chris Sinclair, if you're with us and we're able to hear you. Chris, can we hear you now?
Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. Good to go.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Okay,
we've been
great.
Having some,
sorry about
some
that.
Technical difficulties. Yeah, good. All right. Well, I'm gonna let Chris talk to us about his expertise, and then we'll get back to getting these questions answered. So go ahead, Chris.
Great. Thank you so much, Chris, and thank you so much to our previous panelists who have discussed such valuable information. And my charge to you all today, listening in on this webinar, is pretty simple. How do you communicate in this epidemic that we're dealing with, this pandemic that we're dealing with across the globe and across the country and in your backyard, in your businesses, with your employees, with your family members, and so on and so forth? I would say that in my 20 some odd years of providing communications advice to my clients, which involve corporations, small businesses, associations, organizations, and I have also consulted with candidates for public office, I have never seen an environment like we're in today. It's unprecedented. There is no easy way to communicate right now, but there's some guidelines I'd like to share with you to keep you in front of your key audiences that you have to communicate with. And I know that the people on this call, the business owners and the folk listening in, come from various sizes of companies, but I want to give you some general rules of thumb in terms of communicating during this time. But I do want to go back and caveat really quickly, there's no right answer. I don't have the right answer. And in a lot of cases, my clients are doing things they've never done before and communicating in a way they've never done before. So it's a little bit of, as we go along this, we're adjusting by the hour, by the minute, based on what's happening with this pandemic. But here are the guidelines. First and foremost, if you're a small business or a large business, it's always a good rule of thumb to have some sort of crisis communications plan in the hopper. Hopefully you never have to use it. If you are a small business, you're probably thinking, gosh, I'd never need a crisis. I don't really need to have a plan. This pandemic is showing that you do need that, and you do need to have that in the hopper and ready to roll when it hits. And what I'll tell you is that the simple rule of thumb for having any sort of crisis communications plan is A, having a spokesperson designated. It could be the owner of the company, it could be the manager of the company, or some employee that's really good, a communications person. Whoever that person is, they need to be assigned as the communicator. I always like to advise that the CEO, the owner of the business, is that person that communicates on a regular basis, both internally to their employees and externally to the public if they have to during the crisis. And then having a plan of action on what is the message, what is it that we have to communicate, being transparent, being as honest as humanly possible. And the lawyers on the phone would say, on the panel would say that you have to consult with your lawyer first, and I would advise you to do that. But to the extent that you can communicate what is happening, in a legal and ethical and transparent way, that has to be done by the spokesperson, the owner, whomever that person is. And then once you've communicated what's happening, what's going on, then a quick 2 to 3 bullet, here's what we're doing to adjust, here's what we're doing to right the situation, to make it better, and communicating that. And then ongoing communicating that as the crisis evolves. And then using the different modes of communication in this day and age, social media, email, anything digital is really front and center because particularly in this particular crisis, we're all stuck sheltered in place and we're all glued to our phones, we're all glued to our mobile devices, we're all glued to our TV screens. So getting in front of people where they are and using that mode of communication is important. But in light of not having a plan or being where you are today, constant communication is really important. Letting your employees know what you're doing, how you're adjusting, what you're doing. If you're adjusting your business because you've been closed down, but you're still able to be in business, how you're doing that. Any sort of creative, as one panelist said, how are you adjusting creatively to keep in business? Communicating that. And then if for some reason you have to communicate with the public, doing it the same way, being authentic, being transparent, telling folk what you're doing, having an action plan. And if you have to, for some reason, deal with the media, having that same designated spokesperson, whether it's internal or external, staying in contact with the media. I could do a whole series on media relations, but it's important that if you do have to deal with the media, that you are helping them get the story they need in a way that doesn't hurts your business, but also communicates the main points that have to be communicated. And so with that, I would say that in light of what's happening, a lot of my clients, whether they're big corporations, big associations, or small businesses, they are, after the initial communication about how they're adjusting and what they're doing and keeping their internal audiences and external audiences updated, they're also, a lot of folk are pivoting to messages about staying at home, messages about the importance of following federal, state, and local guidelines, the importance of not breaking those guidelines, the importance of everybody making the sacrifice that they're making. A lot of my clients are doing specific messaging about, hey, take a pause, stay at home. And if you can do that, I would suggest doing that in a thoughtful way, in a way that strikes the appropriate tone. And tone is so important in the current crisis. Never have I used the word tone or tone deaf in all of my conversations in the last several weeks, last month with my clients as I have. I've never used that as much and I am now, but that tone is so important. The other pivot that a lot of folks are making is if they're in a position, and I know a lot of people are hurting and they can't do this, but if they're in a position to help and communicate that, how they're helping, that is really important. Not only in the sense that the altruistic side of that is important to you as a person and a company and your value set, but also your brand. You know, if you are in a position to supply PPEs to hospitals and healthcare workers, and you do a drive, communicate that. Use social media. Build a small campaign on social media. Communicate that with your employees, get if they're able to help. Communicate that with the public. There's nothing wrong with everyone sharing in the effort, and there's nothing wrong with giving yourself a little credit for doing that because that helps with your brand. So I'm now working on my third pivot campaign on what my clients are doing to help on the front lines and also communicating that and doing that in a thoughtful way. I'd like to close by saying tone is so important, as I've stressed. It's really critical that you're not tone deaf to the situation, that you're striking that appropriate tone. And that's a delicate balance at times, but I'd like to leave you with that. And then I'd like to close by saying that there's no right or wrong answer in how you communicate right now, unless it deals with a legal implication. And that's important. But being authentic, showing how you're adapting to this in your own personal life, to your employees and to the external audiences, there's nothing wrong with that. We're all in this together, sharing that story, putting it out there, sharing the good news in the challenging times. All of that's really important in my mind because it shows the unity that we're all in, but also shows your ability to cope and your ability to manage this particular crisis. So I'd like to thank Chris, you and your team for pulling this together and the opportunity to share my thoughts with the audience.
That's great. We really appreciate your involvement. And I think you've emphasized a lot of points that we've heard, but that we need to hear over and over again, especially about how do we find ways to communicate how we're helping and all that. So we really appreciate your time, Chris. And of course, we will be sending out follow-up information via email to all of our attendees about everything we talked about today. So any resources or anything that we've talked about, we'll do our best to link to. We have just a handful of minutes left in the hour, and we have a handful of questions as well. So I want to try to get through these, and we'll throw them out and see if we can get them answered. First thing that's probably worth talking about is I know that Cherith, in your presentation, you referenced SBA and economic relief loans, and we've gotten a question basically with the PPP and the economic relief loans that we've seen from SBA. How do we navigate that? How do we know which ones we should be paying attention to? And I think I also saw somewhere else that you can use a PPP loan to help pay for pay off an SBA loan. Anybody want to give us some info on that?
This is Brian. I'm happy to jump in if no one else has an answer.
Sure. Yeah, Brian. Appreciate it.
So when John was talking, he described how the amount of the PPP loan is essentially a multiple, a 2.5 multiple of your average total monthly payroll costs. That's true. There's an addition to that also. In addition to that, you can add in the outstanding amount of any prior disaster relief loan you had received after January 31st. So if, for instance, you had gone ahead and gotten a what's called an EIDL loan, an emergency injury disaster loan after January 31st, you can increase the amount of your PPP loan in order to refinance that EIDL loan and essentially turn that EIDL loan that could be up to $2 million at 3.75% interest if you're a for-profit entity, from a loan that has to be repaid up to 4 years into a PPP loan where you can have much, if not all of that, forgiven over time. That's obviously a huge benefit, and that's one of the things that's actually intended by the Paycheck Protection Program, is to have people refinance these other disaster relief loans. So you can have both of those. You can convert the emergency loan into a PPP loan, and you can even if you're applying for an EIDL loan now, you can ask for an emergency EIDL loan. An emergency EIDL grant of $10,000. You'll get that within 3 days. Regardless of whether or not you get the EIDL loan, you get to keep the $10,000. The caveat is that if and when your PPP loan is forgiven, you've got to pull that $10,000 out of the amount that's being forgiven. So those provisions work together well. I think what we're seeing with a lot of our clients, though, and potential clients and people who are asking us questions, is that the PPP loans are really what people are looking at right now. The opening for businesses, the application starting tomorrow for businesses, and then next week for other folks, that's what people are really focusing on. But it is important to remember there are some other provisions out there that work in conjunction and were intended to work in conjunction with it.
All right, great. So we also have a handful of questions that are kind of around how do these loans impact 1099 contract, you know, employees, their contractors. Also, what about sole proprietor? If I am the sole owner operator of the business, you know, how does this impact me and self-employed folks? So those kind of all go together.
This is John, and I can give a brief answer to that. The answers are, of course, more complex than we can do here. But answering the second part of that first, what about people who are self-employed? You are a small business under this act. You would be able to obtain a loan, and your compensation that you pay yourself would be the amount of your payroll. So, there are ways to figure that out, which are set forth in the statute, but it's essentially the same things that a small business does for its employees. If you are self-employed, your income, your pay to yourself through your activities is what is being covered, because it allows you to maintain your insurance and maintain your income and stay off of unemployment. So that's the reason why you're included. I think your application begins next week, not tomorrow. Tomorrow is for entities, and next week is for independent contractors and self-employed.
So if you're an employer and you've got 1099 contractors working for your business, how would you counsel them? Did they ought to treat themselves as the business?
Just about to get to that point. For the purposes of deciding whether you're under 500 employees, only employees matter. Part-time and full-time, you count their heads, and that's how many employees you have. 1099s, because of the wording of the statute and some SBA regulations, don't apply. So if you have 498 employees and 15 independent 1099 contractors, you have 498 for the purposes of this statute, and you fit. But when you're looking at your payroll expenses and what you can use these funds for, payments to 1099s are included in the amounts that you calculate. So it seems inconsistent, but when you look at the rationale and the reasoning behind the bill, you can start to understand why they treated them differently in the two sections of the bill. The question that I think has come up, and we frankly don't know the answer to and are kind of waiting on the SBA to tell us how they're going to treat this, is what if I'm a 1099 for somebody's employment or in somebody's business, and they're calculating their pay to me as part of their payroll expense, and I apply for my own PAP loan. That's going to end up double tapping. So I think the SBA is going to have to figure out a way to avoid that. But it's not really clear right now how that will be avoided.
Yeah. All right, good. What about 501c6 organizations? We have a question. Do they qualify?
Unfortunately, the language is very clear in the statute that employers under this or small businesses under this statute now are 501c3 nonprofit organizations and C19s. I think what you'll see, because there's some other organizations, I think, if I'm not mistaken, a C6 includes things like a chamber of commerce or a convention and visitors bureau, those types of pro-business advocacy organizations. They are not included, but I bet you will see either state level help or another act coming out of the House of Representatives in the next few weeks, which may help address those things. I think that's a gap that was left that they did not address in this bill, unfortunately.
Gotcha. All right, good. And then I have a couple other questions about people that own interest or they own solely several businesses. How does that affect their application?
That is a much more complicated question than you might think. This act applies the normal Small Business Administration affiliates rules. So you basically add up all the employees of all the affiliated organizations to see whether you fall under 500. And you might have to apply for one loan for all of those affiliates, unless, and this is the exception in the statute, unless your national industrial code starts with 72, which the shorthand for that is food service and hospitality. There are certain exceptions built into the bill that allow those entities to sort of treat separate restaurant locations as separate businesses. But it's much more complicated than that. And please don't go out and fill out your application based upon this conversation. Talk to your lender, talk to your financial advisor, and talk to your lawyer about that.
All right.
I'm just going to say one of the questions on the actual application asks if you have more than a 20% interest in any other business. Part of the reason they're doing that is to watch out for double dipping, making sure you're not getting a loan for multiple businesses that are essentially the same. And as an example, you may own a business that also owns the property, and you've got the property in a separate LLC. So you've got two businesses there. And a question is, my operating business wants to apply for a PPP loan. Can my real estate holding company also do that? I don't see that answered by the statute. I don't know if John has seen that answered by the statute. I don't think it is. My guess would be that if you're not operating, but it's essentially an adjunct to your main operating business, you're probably not going to be able to get two loans. But I don't think it's addressed directly by the statute.
One area that I would say would inform that question is that the law makes very clear that you cannot apply from two different lenders, and you can't apply for two different loans, and you are swearing in your application that you're not doing that. It is aimed at preventing people from double tapping and getting part of this limited resource doubled. And so I would think, and this is just my thoughts on this, but I think it's a pretty safe prediction, they are going to discourage anything that might look like double tapping. So that should be kept in mind.
We do appreciate everybody's time today on our panel. I'm sorry we ran out of time for questions, but we're going to have to try to keep getting better at these as we do them. We're going to continue to do them each week. Just one last time, wanted to appreciate not only our panelists today, but also everyone that attended. And you should be registered already for next Thursday's. And if not, go ahead and sign up and we'll see you there.
We were just listening to this week's Here to Help Local Business Virtual Conference. Now, the next webinar is going to be held on Thursday, April 9th, and you can sign up at WREL.com/webinar. You can also find more ways to help your local community by going to WREL.com and search Support Local. All right, guys, this has been the Out and About Podcast, a production of CBC Podcast Network. Hopefully you like what you heard. Share with your friends. Subscribe. Hit that subscribe button. Have a great weekend.